A white man? No!
Up as a white man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap.
Yeah.
I was remarking that I am not surprised that I don't remember so many of these now post Into the Woods because nothing yet has been worth remembering since that episode.
No. Oh my God. This episode was so boring.
There is.
It had like a 7.7 rating on IMDb.
Because it
like for
in theory,
what?
It could be like the premise could be good if they had done something with it,
but it wasn't. It was so
but
dull.
They didn't do anything with this premise. It's very strange.
Yeah.
We're talking about 25 to Life, which originally aired December 15th, 2010. And right off the bat, they're setting us up for No Hotch. No Hotch to watch.
There's none. He's taking some time off. They're
finally
on, he's like on the phone. Was this the whole season where they just like didn't have any budget? So like maybe they had to like cut everybody's roles down. Like everybody has to take an episode off so we don't have to pay you.
And that's what I was thinking at the beginning of this because they do this bizarre setup and I was like, is this going to be just a Morgan standalone? Is everyone else on vacation this week? It was so weird.
No, everybody else was there. Maybe Thomas Gibson like had the flu.
Maybe.
Just write him out of the episode.
Had something else going on.
Yeah. But yeah, he's on the phone with Rossi. Rossi tells him to take some time off. Prentice comes in and tells Rossi that Seaver wants to stay on the team to finish her remediation or whatever. And she's like, I'll take responsibility as your supervisor. And I'm like, why?
Why would you want her to stay after that?
She did not contribute in any meaningful way to anything.
No. Nope.
All she did was make a giant mistake and almost get herself killed and put everybody in danger.
Yep.
She clearly needs more training.
Yeah.
Like, send her back to the academy. She has no business being here
and
at
she,
all.
And she, from what we see, has absolutely no BAU training. She has no background in any kind of psychology or
she doesn't know anything about anything. Like,
she's not a replacement for JJ. She's not a communications person. So what point would she be serving here? She's blonde.
They needed a blonde
they
girl.
They can't get Garcia to take that wig off yet.
So Strauss comes in then, speaking of blonde lady, to talk to Rossi. She asks about Hotch. Rossi tells her that Jack is having some problems. And you're like, yeah, no kidding. So they discuss, which this is apparently the only case the BAU has.
It's like, good thing there are no active serial killers while Hotch is away.
Yeah,
just
they're
this
like, we
one
just have
weird
this
parole
one,
thing.
This one pending case. And you're like, JJ had
stacks.
Mountains of files in her office. And now, since JJ's not there, nobody's calling.
Like, they're just all going to that office, still piling up. Nobody's looking at them.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, we didn't know we needed to check her mailbox. Shit. But yeah, it's some guy who killed a bunch of people 20 years ago. They're very vague on the details at first.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we've got to do a risk assessment on him. And Rossi's like, well, I can't do that because Hotch is out of town. I've got to be here.
For
you're
what?
Like, for what? There's no cases.
You just said there was nothing to do.
There's nothing to do. But yeah, then we learn that Don Sanderson was convicted of killing his wife and daughter 25 years ago. He is up for parole, but he, like, Strauss doesn't believe that he's innocent, but he's maintained his innocence all this time and said that there were, like, three junkies who came in.
Yeah,
and killed
his family.
His family.
But there was lots of physical evidence pointing to him.
Yeah, which they never really, they're like mountains of physical evidence.
They never,
and they never
address that.
Address it.
I would love to know what that was.
Yeah.
Especially once we learn more about the crime itself.
Yeah.
I have thoughts, but we'll get there.
We'll get there. But yeah, they were like, well, Morgan's free. Send him.
So he knows nothing about this man or this case, so.
Yeah. So in jail,
he literally walks into the cell block. You don't think this is kind of like a private room meeting kind of thing?
No.
He's just sits with him in his cell.
Leave him there too.
Right.
Like there's no guard standing right there or anything.
No.
They're just like, well, we'll be back.
Right. And like
just
other
lock
prisoners
him into
can
the cell.
Hear this conversation, which seems really odd.
So weird.
It's just, if you thought this, the setup of this episode is weird, Then they do this, and then the conversation, and then, like, the way the prisoner is behaving, and, like, all of it is just,
yeah,
I don't know.
So, yeah, Sanderson tells Morgan that no one ever believes he's innocent, so he doesn't expect Morgan to either. Mm-hmm. Sanderson was a pediatrics resident when he, like, his family died and he was imprisoned. Morgan asks him about a time when heroin was found in his cell, and Sanderson says it was planted there. He has apparently been a model prisoner, minus the heroin, because he has, his son is still, like, out there somewhere, and he just keeps thinking about his son and wants to do the best he can, mm-hmm. like, for him. Then Morgan brings up that he's been beaten up and sent to the infirmary 16 times without ever trying to fight back.
Over 25 years, roughly once every other year.
And he tells Morgan he just wants the opportunity to tell his son that he didn't hurt their family. We also learn that while imprisoned, Sanderson started a mentorship program and has helped 41 inmates get their GED, mm-hmm. roughly two per year.
In between
the severe beatings.
Physical assaults.
Yeah. Morgan asks him what he'd do with his freedom, and he tells him that he'd find his son and tell him the truth. So then Morgan thinks about it.
And I was like, wait. Is this decision solely up to Morgan?
I guess, yeah. Well, he has to make his recommendation to the parole board.
So yes.
Yeah. So he, like, just sits around to some dramatic music for, I don't know.
A long time, it feels like.
2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just with his, like, eyebrows all furrowed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. and then he decides to advocate for Sanderson's parole. He believes that Sanderson has been reformed and that he's no longer a danger to himself or society.
And he says, behavior doesn't lie. And I was like, isn't that precisely what psychopaths do, though?
Right? Lie with their behavior? Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. So Sanderson is released, and he and his very ill-fitting suit move into a halfway house. The suit that he is wearing is enormous.
Yes.
He's a
tall man.
A tall, lanky man.
How do you find a suit too big for such a tall guy?
It's a very wide suit for a very thin man.
That's it.
It looks ridiculous.
He looks so familiar, too. Do you know who he is?
No.
Did you watch Veronica Mars?
Yes.
He was...
I watched the first, like, two seasons.
The dad, Jake Kane, the rich dad.
Oh!
The first boyfriend's dad. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, why does this guy... He was also in City Slickers, and for a second I got excited, but then I remembered City Slickers isn't the one you love, it's Three Amigos.
Yeah, it is. So. I also do like City Slickers.
But I was like, man, it's another reason to do the, ancillary podcast thing for the Patreon. I was like, no, wait, that's Three Amigos.
I'm sure we can find a City Slickers connection somewhere. Then, like, you know, it's like the next morning, basically. Strauss arrives at the BAU office and tells the team that Don Sanderson just killed a guy. We're like, whoopsie doopsie, Morgan. You're like, fuck this one up. You had one job.
You got right down to it.
And then, that's like the end of the opening. Opening is very
long. It's over 10 minutes long.
Yeah. That's like a quarter of the episode.
Yes,
yeah. And then the credits started and I was like, wait, what? we got our first quote. There is no such thing as part freedom. Nelson Mandela, who I'm sure would be thrilled to have his words be used.
Like when they use Martin Luther King episode. Jr. Like, oh, you guys, there's some people you need to stay away from.
Yeah. The team arrives at the crime scene where Sanderson is being loaded into the police car.
Loved this part so much. Because they put Sanderson in the car and they close the door and Morgan just stands like 10 feet away from the car door and stares at him through the window while everybody else talks about what's happening for like an absurd amount
of time. Yeah, he's just like... giving him a death glare.
And he's like his feet spread wide, like arms just down at his sides, like Superman kind of just staring. Like, this is really weird.
Yeah. Prentice and Reed and Seaver wonder why Sanderson didn't just leave the scene of the crime. They're like, why would he just stay here? He apparently stabbed the guy, called 911, performed CPR, and then claimed self-defense. Mm-hmm. And then Morgan finally goes over to the car and he's like, you're coming with us. He just takes him. Cause I guess you can do that. I don't know. There is a detective in here in this episode. He pops up like twice.
He was like, he's just like, yeah, go ahead. They're like, do you want to come with us? He's like, I got enough to do here.
No, you handle this. I've heard you have a very light caseload.
We're really busy.
And this is DC, so we're we are otherwise occupied. So yeah, then inside the house, Reed and Prentice and Seaver imagine a very long and dramatic fight scene, which they're like,
what a fight scene.
They're just like just killing time.
Yeah.
They clearly have nothing to do in this episode. So they're like, let's give them like a 27-minute fight scene.
Yeah.
But eventually it ends with Sanderson stabbing this guy. His name is Tommy, I guess.
An adult man.
An adult man named Tommy. The gun that he brought with him to threaten Tommy was purchased legally by Sanderson. I think.
No, it wasn't. Was it Tommy's?
Or was it Tommy's gun? I was really unclear.
Legally by Tommy.
Yes, because they say in 1994, but he would have been in prison at that point. Yeah. So yeah, it was not loaded.
No,
there was like never any threat with the gun itself. But they wonder what was so pressing that Sanderson would have hunted him down 2 days after being released from prison. You're like, obviously this man he knows has something to do with his family being killed. Like, obviously, come on, you guys.
Yeah.
Have you not seen a TV? This is so dumb. But yeah, they're like, what could it be?
It's a real thinker.
What's the one thing we know about Don Sanderson?
Besides that he killed his family and no one else. There couldn't be anything.
Yeah. The only thing we know is that he says someone else did it.
But that doesn't make any sense. So.
No. So Rossi and Morgan talk to Sanderson in the car. He says that Tommy attacked him. And Morgan's like, did you even find your son? He's like, it's been 48 hours. Yeah. He's like, did you even look?
Like, no.
He doesn't have a computer.
I was like, avenging the death. Have you seen his halfway house, Morgan? There's nothing in there.
All he has is a suit. So the team has no idea how this Tom Whitman guy is connected to Sanderson. They just can't even fathom it.
Yep.
Sanderson's story about his wife and daughter's murders is that he was asleep on the couch. He woke up to his wife's screams. He was then knocked unconscious when he awoke and his wife and daughter had been stabbed. Mm. He called for help, claiming that two men were responsible, but then later changed his story to add a female perpetrator as well. And they note that Tom Whitman would have been a teenager at the time. And they also say that because of his medical training, the wounds could have been self-inflicted.
Oh, yeah, because he was stabbed too.
No, he was just knocked unconscious.
Oh, I thought he was also stabbed or something. No. That's why they said that about his medical training.
No.
How do you knock yourself unconscious in medically informed
way?
What
part of medical school? Is that
I thought he had been stabbed, but like Away the Reaper did it, you know? So it's
I don't think so. I think he just was unconscious and woke up and they were like, well, he could have knocked himself out. And they're like, what? And
you don't have to be a
doctor.
You don't have to be a doctor to knock yourself unconscious.
I'm pretty sure I could knock myself unconscious. I have nearly done it just by like leaving a cabinet door open and then standing up.
Yeah. I thought I had missed something there. And he had been more gravely wounded.
I don't think so.
Because
didn't make any sense to me. Maybe I missed something because I was very half-assedly watching this episode.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Strauss and Morgan watch Sanderson from behind the glass. Strauss tells Morgan that she's like, he's very convincing. I can see why you fell for this. Mm. And he's like, your reputation's on the line. And he was like, I don't care. And she's like, you should.
Right. Again, trying to make Strauss look bad when she's not doing anything bad.
Like at this point, she's just not being that. Like later she gets adversarial for dumb reasons, which we will get into. But in this particular scene, he's like, I don't care about my reputation. She's like, you probably should.
Yeah. You're going to ruin your career over this guy? Why?
Yeah. So Morgan then goes in and accuses Sanderson of playing him. Sanderson maintains his innocence and says he knows how it looks, but it was self-defense. Garcia tells the team that there was no history of strife or discord in the Sanderson household prior to the murder. The attack on Mrs. Sanderson was really brutal, indicating that it was personal in some way. And the murder of the daughter seemed more like an afterthought. But she was like little. really like five or something, and then the son was a baby. Sanderson tells Morgan that Whitman was going to tell him who killed his family. Shockingly, he was connected to the murders. Like,
what?
He tells Morgan that he spent his time in prison going over and over the night of the murders and remembered that Tommy, who was a grocery store delivery kid, who always he felt paid too much attention to his wife, like he finally connected their voices, like the voice that he heard during the attacks and Tommy, the kid who delivered their groceries. Then he looked into Tommy. But once he started doing that, then there was heroin planted in his cell and he lost all of his internet privileges.
It's a conspiracy.
Yes. And you're like, sure. So then Morgan's like, all right, you son of a bitch, I'm in. Like, that's all it takes. He's like, all right, we've got to prove your story.
Yeah.
So they take him back to his old house and Sanderson, they're like, how could he have just slept through three people walking past him? And he was like, I just got home from a 36-hour shift at the hospital and I fell asleep with the TV on. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's probably somebody could just
like
walk past
it's raining him. Outside, the TV is on, the fireplace has a fire going in it. And
it would not be hard to sneak past that if you had been awake for 36 hours.
Look, it doesn't take much to sneak past Nate, and he has none of those things working in his favor.
Remembers Tom's voice telling the man who was actually doing the attack that it was enough. And just kept saying, like, that's enough, stop. And that the woman who was with them wanted to take the baby with them and kidnap him, I guess.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems like a really dumb part of the plan, but...
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm sure.
It doesn't make any sense.
So, Tommy was arrested several times as a kid and was in, like, juvie. So they look into young women who were arrested at the same time and place as him, and they find this Mary woman who was, like, 22
at the
time.
Here's the thing, they're like, well, it couldn't have also been a teenager if she wanted to take the baby. I'm like, really? Because that seems like something some, like, 17-year-old that's high on drugs would think is a good plan, not an adult.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's 22, they're like, 22, that makes more sense.
It's like, way different than a 17-year-old. Because like, Tommy was like 19 at the time.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, couldn't have been a kid.
Like, what? Like,
what?
None
that
of it
sounds
makes
exactly
sense.
Like something a 19-year-old would want to do. If you were older than that, you would be like, I don't think we should take this baby.
Right.
That seems, I don't want a baby. That seems like a bad idea.
Right. And it just, I don't know, all of the BAU apparently buys into this immediately too, which I find strange.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. None of this matters.
So, yeah. Sanderson confirms that...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He confirms, yes. Mm-hmm. But they only show him...
That's what I said. Because the they show him the one picture. So, of course,
like,
he's like,
he's
going to
be like,
her.
That's her. He doesn't pick her out of a lineup.
Nope,
they lay
it made me so
one
mad.
Photo in front of him. I'm like, that can't be the protocol that you do this.
I was so mad.
If I sent a picture in front of you and said, is this that person? You'd be like, it is.
Is this that person you saw briefly in the dark
25
when you were
plus years ago?
Right before you were knocked unconscious 25 years ago.
In the most traumatic experience of your life.
I would be like,
yeah.
Do you think it is? Sure. Yeah, if you think it is.
That they go back to this house to do this like cognitive interview process after 25 plus years and think it's going to go well is also mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
But he remembers everything crystal clear and then,
of course, like you do, because that's how memory works. People definitely have photographic recall.
Yeah. Confirms from the singular photo that that's definitely her.
Yes. So then Morgan and Prentice arrive at her house and find that she has also been attacked. Mm-hmm. So,
But they get there like... mid-attack. Freshly attacked.
Yes, very freshly attacked because...
she's still alive.
She's still alive and there's a noise outside from the fire escape. Mm-hmm. So then they have a very long fire escape exit and it's like the guy who's running away is like sliding down the poles and like doing
and
everything really
he's
like
he's in a tracksuit.
Yeah, like really like acrobatically, and Morgan's just like jogging down the stairs. Uh-huh. And the like fire escape chase scenes are so exhausting because it's just like step, turn around, step. It's like, this is not fun to watch. Why are you doing this? Like, just have him like chase him on the street. I would rather watch that. It would be more interesting.
Yep.
But yeah, he gets away because he has a significant head start on mm-hmm. Morgan. He's never going to catch him.
Yep.
So then we get back to the apartment. Mary has died from the attack, and Rossi and the detective who has shown up for the second time in this episode decide that she must have something on the killer. Reed and Seaver both note the irony of looking for a liar in DC. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow. Okay. Well, Seaver, glad you're here because you've contributed literally nothing to this episode.
Somebody had to be blonde.
Yes. Prentice finds a VHS tape on top of the cupboard in Mary's house. And it is a video. It starts out and it's Mrs. Sanderson and the kids, and they'd like made her breakfast in bed and it's really cute and everything. But then it's like been taped over with a recording of the attackers entering the house. And you're like, where did you get the video?
Right.
And then tape so over is it.
Was it?
Why are you taping over it also? Oh. Like why are you taping this that you're doing?
Did they, so it was the family's like camcorder and.
But they got, they went.
Was the tape already in it? But it shows them coming in.
Like, I thought they were going like up the stairwell to the apartment. Or maybe they were already in the house.
I guess they were already in the house.
It's so dumb. The whole thing is so stupid.
Yeah. It's
like, why would you be taking a video of this at all?
Because they needed blackmail.
Be like, you're dumb enough and high enough that you're going to kidnap a baby, but you had the forethought to,
I know,
like take a video just in case you were ever going to need to blackmail somebody.
I
like,
don't understand. I know.
So it's Tom and Mary and a hooded figure who insults the Sandersons and says they like are like really uppity or whatever and they deserve this. And they look down on everyone and he's like, let's do this. And then they enter. So they must be like entering the bedroom. I don't know. Sanderson wants to see the video, at least the beginning part, because he hasn't seen photos of his wife or his kids in 25 years because they wouldn't let him have them. That's actually really
sad.
That's
very sad. Yeah, and he just rewinds this like 10 seconds.
Especially because the amount of evidence we've learned is that he was unconscious during the attack and could have knocked himself out.
That was the physical evidence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I guess his fingerprints were on the murder weapon.
Sure, he lives there. If it was a knife from their house...
My fingerprints are on everything in my house.
Right.
Okay.
It would be everywhere, but...
So the team guesses that Mary must have been getting something from the killer. Probably money, because she didn't make enough money to pay for the apartment she was living in or the private school that her son attended.
Didn't look like a very nice apartment, so I was confused about that, too.
DC is really expensive.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And then they're like, was like the son, the like, this, or was the, her son the son of the unsub?
Yeah.
Like they imply that at one point. And you're like, I don't know, go find the fucking kid and ask who his dad is.
Right.
But they're not going to do that.
No.
Instead, they ask Garcia to look for rich and powerful men in DC.
I'm sorry. I loved the like narrow down they do.
Yeah.
Like the parameters that they give her. Did you write those down?
I did not. Did you?
I did, but my computer died. Hold on.
But yeah, it's really great because Garcia is just like, you want me to look for rich and powerful men? And they're like, yes. And she's like, do you have anything else that you could give me, even a little bit?
It's nonsense. It's like, came from nothing, but now has everything. And like stuff like that.
Yeah. Because they tell her like, not, they're not looking for a politician, but they're looking for a powerful and sociopathic businessman, because businessmen often have the same qualities as sociopaths, but they put them to different use. I'm like, no, they don't. They put them to the same use.
They put them to the use of making money.
Yeah. You're like, okay, yeah, Elon Musk hasn't physically killed a person. It doesn't make him not a sociopath.
There are a lot of other qualifiers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like manipulative and... grew up in the DC area. I'm like, what? What? Manipulative but trustworthy. Grew up in the DC. Came from.
Yeah. How would you like? What is the search you're doing for find someone who is manipulative but trustworthy?
Continues to do damage in DC.
Yeah.
And Garcia's like. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is she looking?
Just
up?
Google men who are damaging my city.
Right. It's like this doesn't. Make any sense.
No. But yeah, then they learned that prior to the Sandersons, the house was owned by the Stanworths, mm-hmm. Who were evicted or something.
Yeah, or foreclosed on.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
But their son, James, uh-huh. is now running for Congress uh-huh. with the campaign slogan, "Let's do this," which was exactly what the hooded figure said on the tape. And it is a really obscure phrase that only this one man has ever used. And I'm like, wasn't your first parameter here not a politician?
Yep. Yep.
And this is what you found, is a man who is a politician.
But we didn't know he would say something crazy like, "Let's do this." He's rubbing these murders in everyone's faces with that campaign slogan. I was cackling. I mean, I'm cackling right now.
It's basically just Nike's slogan.
Right? Because he said, "Let's do this," before the murder started.
Yeah. They're like, "Well, it's him. It's definitely him."
Yeah.
And Strauss is like, "Okay, well, you're probably going to need more than that to arrest Stanworth."
No.
And she's like, "You guys really don't understand politics." And Rusty's like, "Oh, I understand it. I just don't care."
Like, but you also don't care about the law, because there's no way that you can arrest this man and it's going to stick.
No.
With this information that we currently
have. This is why they need Hutch, because he was a lawyer and he could be like, right? "You guys, no."
I mean, yeah.
But yeah, then.
I mean, what other phrase?
But also, like, sure, bring him in for questioning.
Right.
Like, but like, I don't understand Strauss's. Like, I really don't understand her objection to them questioning him, because he is running for Congress. He is not a congressman.
Right.
He has no power.
Look, DC congressmen don't have power anyway. They don't get to vote on anything.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, also, people would love that. People love when a political candidate, like, you know, like, if Dr. Oz, when he was running for Congress, somebody would have been like, "I think Dr. Oz actually killed a man," like killed a woman and a little girl when he was young.
People would be up in points,
frothing at the mouth,
yeah,
to get information
on
that.
The media would be talking about. It's true.
But they're like, "No, we can't bring him in." You're like, "Why? He's just some political candidate. Like, he's not going to take your job, Strauss. Who cares? He can't. Just..."
I really just want to come up with more campaign slogans and pretend that it's something that murderers said right before they murdered somebody.
Everything's going to be all right now. We got this. But yeah, so Morgan, Rossi, and Prentice, and the detective, and another random man in a suit who I assume is another detective or something, decide to crash Stanworth's fundraiser party. Mm-hmm. And like, he is in the middle, or like just at the very end of the speech.
Yeah.
Like, he's giving like the last speech when they walk in the door, and Morgan's like, slow clap.
From the back.
And everybody turns and looks, and he's like, "You're a good talker." And you're like, "You didn't hear anything he said. You missed the entire speech. Maybe he is, but maybe he's not. You don't know. That was a dumb thing to say."
Oh, like, because Morgan's like, "There's going to be proof that he killed that Mary woman." And I'm like, are they going to go in and just like undress him in the middle of this thing and look for scratches on him or something?
Yeah. They ask his wife where he was at 3 p.m. today. And then they... like, he, like, grabs his wrist and pulls his wrist up, and there's like, scratches on his hands.
"Do you know
hands.
Where it was at 3 p.m.? Never mind. It doesn't matter."
Look at the scratches
up,
on his
talking.
Hand. And the wife's like, "What is happening?"
I love her waspy accent, too.
Yeah, it's like...
it's very over the top.
Yeah. It's like, at first it was like, is she British?
Yeah.
She is not.
No.
She's just like...
Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah. Exactly.
Then they start profiling him to his face.
In front of everybody. And like, all the people in the background are just like, what?
It's really embarrassing. This is really embarrassing.
So awkward.
And not for him, for the BAU.
Yeah. Because he's just like, wow, I'm just going to get my lawyer. And they just keep yelling at him. Yeah. And then finally is like, I don't panic. And they're like, there it is. We got you. And you're like, he didn't say anything incriminating.
So you still have no evidence. You made a scene and now you're arresting him. And guess what? They're going to release him and then he's going to sue you.
And also, Mary's dead. You could get her on that.
Yeah.
But you still have nothing at all connecting
Emily,
him.
He said, let's do this. And he was wearing a hoodie.
Like, they have nothing to exonerate, to exonerate Sanderson.
Has Sanderson ever said, let's do this?
Probably not. Probably not.
He would never.
Like,
he would never
Tom
say
and
something
Mary
like
are
that.
Both dead. And then are we supposed to assume then that Stanworth found out that Sanderson was Googling Tom Whitman or Whitworth or whatever his name is, and then had heroin planted in his jail cell?
Yes, so that his possible run for Congress of Washington, D.C.
Several years later.
Uh-huh. All to protect his someday. I mean, the Congress people of D.C. don't really get to do anything.
Yeah.
They don't get to vote on bills. They exist, but like you don't get anything out of it.
It's
so he's going to go through all of that just to be able to maybe he doesn't even win yet.
Yeah, he's not a sitting congressman. He's just running.
He's just running. I don't
sure.
get it.
So then Strauss watches. Oh, they arrest Stanworth for still no evidence of anything, except that he has a scratch on his hand and nobody could tell where he was at 3 p.m. today. But yeah, he's taken away. And then Strauss watches as Morgan tells Sanderson the news about Stanworth, like watches him through the like two-way mirror thing.
Yeah.
So Sanderson and Morgan then are chatting in the park. Morgan tells him that his son Joshua is studying medicine and wants to start a free clinic or something, and that he knows now that Sanderson was innocent. And the car pulls up with Joshua inside, and he and Sanderson get to reunite.
It's a big hug.
And like, it is a big hug. And I don't know that
I
would be
that
so.
That may not be a stranger to you.
You've never met this man, basically.
Right. You wouldn't know him. Like, he was so little when all of this happened. It's like, I've never met you before.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd like just go over and hug somebody. Right? And be like, maybe can you want to go for a walk and get some coffee?
Yeah. Like, let's get to know each other or something.
Yeah. But yeah, then we get our end quote. All truths are easy to understand once you discover them. The point is to discover them. Galileo. Mm. Nelson Mandela and Galileo.
Wow. What bookends that are.
Yeah.
Those are. Yeah.
So that was that.
Well, no profile. No hotch to watch. I did this as just one mail and sub.
Yeah, because it seemed like
the other two were just accessories,
like maybe. Like, it didn't seem like that was what they came there to do.
Right. And they didn't really do any of it.
Yeah.
Like,
they considered.
Like, Tommy thought it was a good idea, but then when it actually started happening, he was like, no, this is not good.
And we have no idea why Mary was there except to contemplate kidnapping a baby.
Which she didn't do. Yeah. So we're 12-2 for white men in season 6. That brings us to a whopping 85.7%.
Wow, we've really jumped.
Yeah. Overall, we are 119-25. That's 82.6%. It's like they had one good idea for this season, Into the Woods. And they were like, we need some filler. And then it's just like 20 episodes of filler.
So much filler.
Right? Like, it just is... not a lot going on.
No. Yeah.
I'm never going to get over them tying him just from Let's Do This. It just like, I don't know any campaign slogans besides like Tippy Canoe and Tyler too. Like if somebody had said that going in, I'd be like, oh, whoa, that's like a very uncommon phrase.
Yeah, nobody says
like,
that.
I like Ike. Like, I'd be like, whoa, that is definitely that weird guy who's also really into Dwight Eisenhower. But
nobody likes Ike.
But I don't understand it's how just, let's do this.
It's such a like common phrase.
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
Right?
Yep. I just didn't like any of this episode.
What are the most common phrases? Let's use one of those.
I hated all of it.
Yeah. Well, next up is Corazon, which I also don't remember. It says Reed suffers from migraines. He's concerned about his health. Do you remember this?
I do remember the migraine plot line because I thought it was going to go somewhere.
You mean like his drug addiction?
Yeah. And it didn't.
It doesn't?
No.
Well.
Yeah.
All right. See if I remember any of it once it starts.
Yeah, I remember that being something where I was like, okay, yeah, we're coming. We're like, we've got a plot, we've got something going on here. And then they were just like, never mind.
This whole season, I'm like, what? Was I like in a fugue state when I watched these? I don't
remember.
It's
because they're just bad. The episodes are bad. The storylines are bad. Now that I remember how it ends.
But... good thing listening to us is still a good time.
Yeah.
We're really selling it on everybody's team.
Keep listening, though.
We'll make it fun. I'll even plug my computer in ahead of time next time. Nate's going to be really mad when he listens to this episode and there's like dead air in the middle because I had to go find my computer cord. Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Unsub is a White Man. Our merch is on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be coming up with campaign slogans.